Mm-hmm.
Eve Bowman was visiting today.
What's this?
He said to tell you he's alive and well.
I haven't seen him in years.
He's on his way to the meeting.
Sorry, I missed him. Okay. Do any of you know what the lesson is this morning? I didn't think so. That's because I didn't tell you. And so I want to fix that now. We're going to be looking for a while at the law. And the law has a meaning. When we look at the Bible, listen to people who talk about the Old Testament, when you think about the law, what does that include? What does that focus on?
First chapter is in the Bible.
The first five books.
First five books of the Bible. And that's when you think about the law and the prophets. You'll see Jesus using that phrase, and when he does that, he's talking about the Old Testament, the Bible that he would have known when he was on earth. Okay. What else? You can do better than just that one, good though that was. What else?
The beginning of the Genesis is the beginning of the world, what we know.
But think again about the law. What does the law? What does the law mean in our days, in a secular sense? The rules and regulations, right? So when you take that and put it on, what does it refer to? God's rules. And, as I said, Ten Commandments. Plus, lots more. But the Ten Commandments are there. Okay?
Jesus came to fulfill it.
Our focus is going to be on the Ten Commandments. But we're actually investing ourselves in the law much more wide and much more general. But our focus is going to be on the Ten Commandments. And what I'd like to do is play journalist for a moment. What are the questions a journalist is taught to ask about a story?
Who, what, when, where, why?
Who? What? When? Where? Why? How? How usually doesn't get in there because the W is on the end instead of the first, and so it's not alliterative. But those are the questions and what I'd like to do is apply those questions this morning to the Ten Commandments as a means of getting us started in this study. We're not going to look at the Ten Commandments this morning. We're going to look at how they came into human consciousness, how they came in. So who? That's fairly straightforward. This was God's action. What? We'll just say the Ten Commandments and plus all these other things. So what I'd like to do now is talk about when and where. When and where did the Ten Commandments come in? Do you know? During the Exodus. And where in the Bible would we probably find a discussion of the Exodus? The book of Exodus. Okay? Okay? And so we find the Ten Commandments discussed in Exodus. Where else would we find them discussed? In Deuteronomy. And God said that with some assurance. I'm really glad to see that confidence, John. Why would we find them in Deuteronomy? What does the Deutero part of Deuteronomy mean? I've taught you several times, but some of you may not have been here. I know if you were here, you'd remember. There's an element called deuterium. But it comes in a family of atoms that are all associated with one particular element. And that element is hydrogen. So why is it called deuterium? Do you know? It's a second form of hydrogen. A little chemistry lesson. It's called hydrogen if it has one proton in the nucleus. It's called helium if it's got two protons in the nucleus. It's called lithium if it's got three protons in the nucleus. It's called beryllium if it's got four. Boron if it's got five. Carbon, six. Nitrogen, seven. And so forth. So if you have one proton, it's hydrogen. Normal hydrogen, most of the hydrogen we have around us, has one proton and nothing else in the nucleus. But there's a second form of hydrogen. It still has one proton. It's got a neutron with it. And there's a third form, it's got a proton, so it's still hydrogen, but it's got two neutrons with it. That's not the same as normal hydrogen. What is it called?
Trillium?
Close, tritium. They couldn't have called tritium, but you had to have a tri in there somewhere. No, it had to have a tri in there somewhere, right? So the butyro part means the second of something. And way back in the Bible, the book of Deuteronomy is the second giving of the law. Who was the law given to the first time? The people who were on the Exodus had come out of Egypt, where they had been in captivity, slavery, right? And Deuteronomy, it was given again to whom? To their children, to the second generation. The unresponsiveness, the fact that the first generation didn't respond to God. God said, okay, fine, I gave you a chance, now your children are going to be the ones who are going to go into the promised land. So it's given in Exodus, and then it's repeated in Deuteronomy. Okay? Now, that's the when part. Was it early in the Exodus, or in the middle of the Exodus, or late in the Exodus, just before they went into the Promised Land? And the answer is, it was early for this one, and it was late for the Deuteronomy. They wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. The first giving of the law came within the first year. The second giving of the law came just before they stopped their wandering in the wilderness and started into the promised land. Okay, so the answer is both early and late. Now, where? A few of you might know. Flatter? Mike Zeiler. It's actually in the desert. And the desert is called the Sinai Desert. And in a specific place at the foot of and on Mount Sinai. Okay? Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to start at that point, but I want to do one more thing. I want to go to how. We're going to hold off on why for a little while. I want to go to how. How were the Ten Commandments given to the people? Everybody knows this, I'm sure. Stone tablets given to the people, right? Gone. That's what I'm going to make sure you see. So, go with me to Exodus 19. I probably should fine-tune what I just said. How were they given? Originally, they were not given on stone tablets. That was not the first. Exodus 19, verse 1. My translation says, 3 months to the day after leaving Egypt. You're saying roughly that? The Israelites reached the desert of Sinai, setting out from a certain city that starts with R. They reached the desert of Sinai and pitched camp in the desert. There they were, facing the mountain. Israel pitched camp. Verse 3, Moses then went up to God, for God called him from the mountain, saying, say this to the people of Israel. Now, I'm going to try if I can to construct a little bit of a chronology here. That's always a little bit dangerous because the Bible doesn't necessarily concern itself overly with chronology. But the picture that I have is the people came and camped, and Moses made a very brief trip up to the mountain. All he hears is what's in verse 4 and 5. So what does he hear? Say this to the house of Jacob. Tell the Israelites, quote, you have seen for yourselves what I did to the Egyptians and how I carried you away on eagle's wings and brought you to me. So now, if you are really prepared to obey me and keep my covenant, you out of all people will be what? My personal or treasured possession even though the whole world is mine. For me you will be, and then he says two things. What are those two things? Kingdom of priests and a holy nation. What does holy mean? Set aside for a specific purpose. Set apart for a specific purpose. That's what holy means. Set aside for a special, specific purpose. Verse 6 continues, those are the words you're to say to the Israelites. Verse 7, so Moses went where? Presumably back down the mountain. And said to the Israelites, summoned the people's elders and acquainted them, mine says, with everything that God had told him or bidden him. And the people all replied with one accord. Now, the picture I have is Moses and the people come. Moses makes a short trip, gets one tight message, comes back down and tells the people what he has heard. And he tells them by telling the elders, and then the elders distribute that to the thousands of people who are there. And the message came back from the people. All of them together said the same thing. What did they say? Whatever the Lord has said, we will do. Moses then reported to the Lord what the people had said. The Lord then, so I have a picture now of Moses making a trip back and forth. I don't know if that happened or if there's some other visitation that came. The Lord then said to Moses, look, I will come to you in a dense cloud so the people will hear when I speak to you and believe you ever after. So that the people will hear as I speak to you and believe you ever after. What's always the problem with someone claiming to speak for God?
Credibility.
How do you know that's what God said? What does God say He's going to do? He's going to fix that. How's He going to do that? The people are going to hear Him speak to Moses. And then when Moses says to the people have no cause to doubt. Moses then told the Lord what the people had said. The Lord then said to Moses, go to the people and tell them to sanctify themselves today and tomorrow. They must wash their clothes and be ready for the day after tomorrow. For on the third day, the day after tomorrow, in the sight of all the people, the Lord will descend on Mount Sinai. And then he goes on to give some very specific instructions. What are the instructions? Yeah, I'm at verse 12, verse 13. Set some limits. The people are to go no further than this on their way up the mountain. Moses goes further, but not the people. What's the penalty?
Death.
Verse 14 and 15, Moses came down from the mountain to the people, made the people sanctify themselves, they washed their clothes, be ready for the day after tomorrow. Verse 16, at daybreak 2 days later, something happened. What happened? What's the first thing it says?
It says thunder and lightning.
Peals of thunder, flashes of lightning. Anything more?
Thick cloud.
Thick cloud, mine says dense cloud on the mountain. And then one very large trumpet blast. And in the camp, there was a reaction in the people. What happened with the people? Almost every translation says trembled, and the ones that don't say tremble say fear. Moses led the people out of the camp to meet God, and they took their stand at the bottom of the mountain. Mount Sinai was completely wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended on it in the form of a fire. Smoke rose like smoke from a furnace, and the whole mountain shook violently. Louder and louder grew the trumpeting. Moses spoke, and God answered him in the thunder. Verse 21, go down and warn the people not to break through to look at the Lord, or many of them will perish. Verse 24, away with you, go down, and come back, bringing Aaron with you, but do not allow the priests and the people to break through to come up to the Lord, or he may burst out against them. So Moses went down to the people and spoke to them. Now what has happened? God has spoken to the people through Moses, and he said two things. I want to make sure you've heard the two things God has said. Did you? This is a summary. It's not. I'm talking about this sentence and this sentence. I'm talking about the essence of two things that he said.
Look at verse 4. What's the first thing he said? You are here for a reason. I have rescued you from the slavery you were in Egypt. What's the second message? Verse 18. And verses around it. What's the second thing that God is communicating?
A little louder. Just a little louder.
His love for the people has been revealed in their rescue from Egypt.
And His power has been revealed in His appearance on Sinai. Why? Well, let's hold that thought for a minute or two.
Verse 25, it is 2 days later. It is the third day by the counting that they used. God has descended on the mountain. His voice can be heard. Moses is speaking and God is answering. That's verse 19. Louder and louder grew the trumpeting. Moses spoke and God answered him in the thunder. And verse 1 of chapter 20, what happens? Read the next few verses and see what you're about to see. What is this? This is the giving of the Ten Commandments. How were the Ten Commandments given? Spoken by God from the mountain to Moses and to all the people. Everybody can hear. I had forgotten that. Had you forgotten that? If you knew it? Seen too many movies. What's the first thing he says? The first thing he says is not the first commandment. What does he do? He identifies himself and does what? Reminds them again that they have been delivered by his action on their behalf. And then he starts into the Ten Commandments. Now, we're not starting the Ten Commandments today, so we're not going to read anymore. We're going to jump down to verse 18. It says in my translation that the people saw four things. Now, it looks like to me at least one or two of them they would have heard instead of seen, but my translation uses the word see for all of these. Excellent. That's a better translation, I think. They sensed, maybe would be a good word to use. They experienced. Witnessed. That's a great word. Saw and heard. That's good. What was it that they saw and heard? Verse 18, thunder pealing. Mine uses a really parallel structure. They saw and heard thunder pealing, lightning flashing, trumpets blasting, and the mountain smoking. And there was a reaction. What was the reaction? Trembled, yours says.
With fear.
Trembled with fear. Mine says they were terrified. Was there any problem keeping their distance from the mountain? No. Mine says they were terrified. And they all were terrified and all kept their distance. And then verse 19, a powerful and important verse. They say something to Moses. What do they say to Moses? You speak to us, and we will obey. But don't let God speak again, or we're all going to die. Okay? Because fear has overwhelmed. The power that God has demonstrated is a power beyond anything they've ever seen or experienced. They had seen the power of Egypt. They were now seeing something that transcended that.
But clearly, he loved them enough to rescue them from Egypt. Why were they concerned that he would turn his wrath against them at this point?
What's the big question that I put last? Why was the law given? Specifically, the Ten Commandments as the summary, as the foundation, as the distillation, if you will. But why was the law given?
Because before we answer that, we got to deal with this. He is demonstrating two things, and the people have two reactions. One reaction is love and gratitude. The other reaction is fear. What happens when you have people whose only attitude toward God is love, and they don't have fear and awe mixed into it? If they forget how powerful God is, if they forget how big God is, what happens? God is awesome. I want to take you to two places very quickly. Let me make sure you understand this. God's love was demonstrated in the rescue. God's power was demonstrated in the appearance. The reaction of the people would have been gratitude and fear, commingled together. Why is he doing that? Because there's a consistent message through the Bible. We're to love God and we're to fear God. Now, please don't miss what's here before I take you someplace else. What is the first thing Moses said to the people?
Do not be afraid.
Don't be afraid. The essence of the fear of God is to get that straight and then learn to live on the other side of fear. But a proper relationship with God begins with gratitude for what He has done and awe or fear for who He is. And then He invites us to a relationship that steps beyond fear. Moses' response to the people is very important. Don't be afraid. God has come to test you. So that your fear of Him being always in your mind will keep you from sinning. What's the purpose of the Ten Commandments? To tell us God's standards and to call us to obey. How are we going to be able to meet those standards? We might meet them out of gratitude. But God knows how we work. How we work. How we're put together. So He gives us a second motivation. There's a whole lot of power here too. Our motivation for meeting God's standards should be both a love relationship and a fear relationship commingled together. Now, I want to take you two places. First to Luke to see some words that Jesus said about this. So turn to Luke chapter 12. I want you to look at verse 4. To you, my friends, I say, don't be afraid of those who kill the body, but after that can do no more. I'll tell you who to be afraid of. I'll tell you who to fear. Fear the one who, after he has killed, what? Has the power to cast you into hell. Jesus' words say, the fear of God is an important piece of who you are and in your relationship with God. Now, turn to Hebrews chapter 12. That was Luke chapter 12. Turn to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews is the last big book before Revelation. There's a bunch of small books in between. Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. The writer of Hebrews is actually taking you all the way back to this moment in the Sinai, this moment before the mountain. Look at verse 18. What you have come to is nothing known to the senses, not a blazing fire or gloom or total darkness or storm or trumpet blast or the sound of a voice speaking, which made everyone that heard it beg that it should no more be said to them.
They could not bear the order that was given. If even a beast touched the mountain, it must be killed. The whole scene was so terrible that Moses said, I'm afraid and trembling. The writer of Hebrews says, that's the visit they got. You're getting something else, something that transcends that. What you've come to is Mount Zion and the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, where millions of angels have gathered for the festival with the whole church of firstborn son enrolled as citizens of heaven. You have come to God himself, the supreme judge, to the spirits of the upright who've been made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to purifying blood which pleads more insistently than Abel's. Make sure that you never refuse to listen when he speaks. Jump down to verse 28. We have been given possession of an unshakable kingdom. Let us therefore be grateful, mindsets. What does yours say at that point? Thankful. And use our gratitude to worship God in the way that pleases him. What is that way? It's got two parts. Reverence, that's love. Awe, that's fear.
Mine says before that, an acceptable service.
Mine uses the word worship. Yours uses acceptable service. Okay. When God gave the Ten Commandments, it was out loud
and audible to the people. They heard it. They were witnesses, one translation said.
And what was their reaction?
Fear.
Moses, you go talk to him. You come back, tell us what he said. Whatever he says, we'll do it. So if you go back to Exodus, what you find is that in Exodus 20, go back there, please. Verse 21, Exodus 20, 21. The people kept their distance while Moses did what? Approached the dark clouds where God was. Now, the picture that I have is that Moses is now moving into the cloud. He's going to stay there for a while. God now gives him details. If you look through what follows, you'll see commentary that begins to touch on one part or another that the Ten Commandments provided a summary for. Take a look, for example, in verse 22. The Lord said to Moses, now this is Moses is now in the cloud away from the people, tell the Israelites this, you've seen for yourselves how I've spoken to you from heaven, you must not make gods of silver to rival me, nor must you make yourself gods of gold. So he's talking about the first commandment. He moves on, and in verse 12 or 13, he talks about thou shalt not kill. In other places, he talks about other pieces of this. He seems to be taking what we will later learn is the second part of the Ten Commandments. The first part of the Ten Commandments, the first three or four, talk about our relationship with God. The last five or six talk about our relationship with each other, with other people. And he seems to be exploring those and giving nuance and detail on those things. But take a look what comes in chapter 23, verse 12. So 21, 22, 23, God is expounding on and expanding for Moses on some of these things. Take a look at verse 12 of chapter 23. What's that one talking about? Talking about the Sabbath. Near the end, he talks about the Sabbath. Okay? Now, if you keep reading, you go through the end of verse 23, there seems to be a break between there and 24. When you come to 24, he seems to be saying, I'm ready now for a delegation to come towards me. So skip down to verse 3, and I think that's really what follows on chapter 23. Moses went and told the people all of the Lord's words and all the laws, and all the people answered with one voice. What did they say? Everything he says, we'll do. I see Moses getting chapter 21, 22, 23 as a summary of these things. He gets from God the nuances, details about the relationship parts of the Ten Commandments. He comes back, and the very first thing he does is tells the people what he heard. What's the second thing he does? I'm now at verse 4. He writes them all down. What's the next thing he does? Builds an altar, has a sacrifice, and then he has a ceremony. And in the ceremony, he takes some of the blood and sprinkles it on the altars, and then on the altar. And then on verse 7, he takes something that the writer of in my translation calls the Book of the Covenant. Do you see that? What is that? That's what he just wrote down. And what does he do? He reads it to the people. As soon as he came back down the mountain, he told them everything God was had told him. And the people said, "We'll do it." He says, "Fine." He wrote it down, and then he reads them what he wrote, basically saying, "Okay, this is what I told you. Have I got it recorded correctly? Do I have it right? Have I been consistent with what I'm telling you now?" And the people say, "We'll do everything he says. We will obey." And Moses took the blood, sprinkled it over the people, and said, "This is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you, entailing all these stipulations." Now, if you go back and pick up verses 1 and 2, I think they actually fit better here. Verses 1 and 2, God then says to Moses, "Bring a group of people up with you." And verse 9, 10, and 11, that group goes up the mountain. I'm not sure why it's recorded in the order it's in Scripture. It looks like to me that's what it's doing. So now there's a group that goes up. Who's in this group? Moses.
Aaron.
Two guys named Nadab and Abihu, and 70 elders of the people. All right? Went up, and what did they do? They had an experience. It doesn't say how close they came. I think they were still at a distance, but they were allowed to see, not just hear, see some of what Moses saw. They ate and drank in the presence of the Lord. They looked on God from a distance. Verse 12, the Lord says to Moses, "Now come up to me, come further up, come to the top of the mountain. Stay there, and I will give you something." What's he going to give him? Stone tablets. "The law and the commandment, which I have written for their instruction." Moses made ready with Joshua his assistant, and they went up the mountain of God. He said to the elders, "Wait here for us until we come back. You have who with you?" Aaron and Hur. This is not Ben-Hur, this is just Hur. "If anyone has any matter to settle, let him go to them." And Moses went up the mountain. It doesn't say whether Joshua went on with him or whether Joshua turned around and went back. I have the picture of Moses going up alone. Cloud covered the mountain. Verse 16 says, "The glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai. The cloud covered it for 6 days. On the seventh day, the Lord called to Moses from inside the cloud." Verse 18, Moses went right into the cloud and went on up the mountain. And he stayed on the mountain how long? 40 days and 40 nights. I have a picture of him waiting partway, 6 days. On the seventh day, there was the call. And then 40 days after that, he stayed up there. Let's check a couple of people just to make sure we know who they are. We know who Moses was. Who was Aaron? Moses' brother. Older brother or younger brother? Older brother, I think. Who were Nadab and Abihu?
One of the elders.
Aaron's boys. Years later, when David comes along as king, there's a system of sacrifices operated by the priests and the Levites. Who were the Levites? Descendants of Levi, one of the 12 sons of Jacob. Who were the priests? They were among the Levites, the descendants of Aaron. The priests had to be descendants of Aaron within the descendants of Levi. Okay? So, here was Aaron, the first high priest, and here were the two boys who were going to be the next two. So far, okay? So, who was her? Not who was she, who was her? If you go back and look a little bit, it looks like to me this was Caleb's son. Joshua and Caleb, you may remember, were the two after this who were part of the 12 sent out to spy out the promised land. And they were the two that came back and said, "We could do it." And they were the ones allowed to enter the promised land. This is his son, Hur. I don't know how old Hur was. I don't know what Hur looked like. I'll not play with that anymore. Moses goes up on the mountain. How long is he there? 40 days. What's the subject this time? Chapter 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31. You got to skim all that real quickly. What's the subject this time? This time the subject is the first part of the Ten Commandments. how do we worship God? How do we relate properly to God? Don't have any gods before me. So what are we supposed to do? To have you as God. So he talks about building the tabernacle, building the Holy of Holies, all the furnishings and all the other things. Back in the book of Hebrews, I'm not going to take time to take you there, but the writer of Hebrews says Moses built within the people something that was a model of what God showed him on the mountain. And what God showed him on the mountain is the reality that's in heaven. So the instructions for worship, and the instructions for worship are detailed. The clothing for the priests, the rites, the purification, the offerings. So it talks about when they're supposed to worship, who's supposed to lead them in worship, how they're supposed to lead them in worship, and all the other parts of proper relationship with God in worship. And in chapter 31, verse 12, as we end this section, what's the subject? Right at the end. The Sabbath again. Notice that same thing. The nature of the Sabbath is almost a pivot that connects the two parts of the Ten Commandments. And if you notice in verse 17, the writer tells you what God sees in the Sabbath obedience, the Sabbath observance. That's the sign for this covenant. Most people think the sign of the covenant was circumcision. That's the sign of the covenant with Abraham. The sign of the covenant with Moses and the people at this time, the sign of that covenant is keeping the Sabbath. When he had finished speaking to Moses on Mount Sinai, that's God. When God had finished speaking to Moses on Mount Sinai, this is verse 18, he gave him what? Two tablets of the, capitalized in my translation, testimony. Tablets of stone inscribed by the finger of God. What was the testimony? Work with me here. Testimony means what? In a law court, I've got a lawyer or two in the room. What's a testimony? Somebody has to say something out loud, right? Right? A friend of mine last week had a deposition. Six lawyers on one side of the table, seven lawyers on the other side of the table. Nobody seemed to be in a hurry because they were earning enough per hour to make it worthwhile for them to be there. Testimony means something said out loud. What was said out loud in the hearing of all the people? The Ten Commandments. Written on tablets of stone, inscribed by the finger of God. Okay? Some people refer to that as the Decalogue. Some people refer to the first five books of the Bible as the Pentateuch. If you listen to Penta and Deca, you'll see the thesis for that. Okay? Why did God give the law? I want to make sure this morning that you see this. We're going to explore this more next week. Next week I'm going to take you into the New Testament and let you see this fleshed out. We're going to be looking in Romans 3. We're going to be looking in Romans 7. So before you come back next week, I would encourage you to read those two chapters at least, if not the whole of the book of Romans. Galatians 3 would be a pretty good thing to look at too. Why was the law given? There were two overarching, overriding reasons why the law was given. And I want you to walk out of here this morning knowing this. What's the first reason? Why did God speak to the people? Why didn't he just give the tablets to Moses?
So that they would know, so that there's no confusion. Number one reason is so that the people would know God's standard. No confusion, and with full clarity. God says, I want you to be really clear and understand this, and I want you to have no doubt that it came from me. Okay? Now, the second reason is tough to see.
But there's, even here, right here in Exodus, it's just as clear as the first one. What's the second reason the law was given? There is a third, there's a consequence or a conclusion that we're not going to go through today. We'll do that next week. But what's the second reason?
Bring the Israelites into a closer relationship with God. Set them
up. You think that. But that turns out not to be it. The second reason for giving the law. The first reason? Rehearse it. So that the people would know God's standards with full clarity and no confusion and know it came from God. What's the second reason? For the people to know. The people then and the people now to know from experience. Which means they're not going to know it right that moment. They're going to find it out later. That nobody can meet God's standards. Nobody can meet God's standards. How long was Moses up on the mountaintop? 40 days and 40 nights. Before the 40 days and 40 nights are up, what has happened back home? The number one command, I will have no other gods before me, has already been broken. And most of the others have as well. The people who said so smugly and so confidently, whatever he says we will do, they couldn't even keep the law for 40 days. The law was given for two reasons. There is a huge conclusion at the end of this that we're not going to today. We're going to go the next time we're together. But the law was given so that everyone would know God's standards. No confusion, full clarity, and know it came from God. And number two, so that they would learn by experience. I put no, that's the wrong word. I meant to put learn. To learn from experience that no one can meet God's standards. No one can meet it. No one can keep it. That is horrible. And I'm leaving you on the edge of a cliff. And I know that. I'm doing that deliberately. We're going to work this out in Romans chapter 3, chapter 7. We'll go a little bit into Galatians, a little bit into Colossians. We're going to look in the New Testament and see how this has worked out. What was the purpose of the law? The purpose of the law was to make God's standards absolutely clear to everyone who ever hears the Ten Commandments. And secondly, to make it clear from experience. Individual by individual by individual. Nobody can live up to them. Let me give you a tiny little preview. What did the Jewish leaders do when they realized those two things? They made some adjustments. Said, oh, when he's talking about killing, he's talking about plunging a knife into somebody's heart. I've never done that, so I'm guiltless on that commandment. And Jesus says, you've heard it said of old that you're not to kill. But I say to you, and what did he say about that one? Matthew 5 is Jesus' commentary on a number of the Ten Commandments. He didn't talk about all of them, I think, because he didn't need to. Once you get the idea of where he's going, you go the rest of the way yourself. What does he say? If you hate your brother in your heart, you've already committed murder. You've already made yourself guilty of that. Lon Solomon is the pastor of McLean Bible Church up in D.C. He's got a sermon series on this, and part of what I'm talking about is guided by that. He did this in 31 minutes. I've had 38 or 39 so far, and I'm not even halfway through it. It's going to take us a little longer to get through some things. I'm not as concise as he is. So if you want to hear sort of another take on this, see some of what I'm talking about, I commend to him to you. Some of those can be found online. But here's the message. If I see God's standards and understand if I'm to be in right relationship with him, this is what I got to do, and then I find out I can't do it, and that I haven't failed once, and I haven't failed twice. I fail thousands of times. I fail 50 to 100 to 1,000 times a day.
what happens now? That's the subject for next week. I've left you on the edge of a cliff. I'm doing so deliberately. Enjoy your week. And I'll see you when we get back together. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you that you have made your standards clear. But today, we stand in awe of your power and recognize that you have seen this long before we saw it, and you've already done something about it. We thank you for that action on your part. We thank you for our Savior. We thank you for our elder brother. And we thank you for your love for us and your presence among us. All these things we pray in your Son's name. Amen.